Hell back and get us some from a gaudy house.
Christy looked long and hard at Hal. She could feel her hair creep around the base of her neck, but had to push him to find out exactly what he meant.
What's that got to do with us?
The man grinned, showing a row of rotten, stained teeth with a couple missing.
Shit! I should have thought that was obvious. Gaudies cost big jack. We don't get the jack for it, 'cause you don't get the work done, then I figure we got the right to take out what we're owed in trade.
And before either woman had a chance to react, his hand had snaked out to between Mildred's legs, grasping and rubbing at her crotch.
Jesus Christ! Oh!
She leapt back more in surprise than shock. Her arm shot out in a straight-arm punch that hit Hal full in the mouth, breaking a few more of his teeth. Oh! Despite the force of the blow, the workman wasn't put off. He was stronger than he looked, and although his head jerked back, it made him tighten his grip, causing a jolt of pain to shoot up Mildred's groin.
Oh!
She yelped in agony and fell to the ground. Hal was on her before she had a chance to react, and she could feel his groin hard against her, his foul breath on her ear.
Oh, don't play hard to get, babe. I'm real hot, you know.
You'd be hotter if you fried in hell, asshole!
Christy drove the silvered tip of her boot into his ribs, the upward thrust of her foot sending him sprawling off of Mildred and into the remains of the cement. While this occurred, a group of men had run from their stations working on the outside of the building. Ryan and JB were in the lead, acutely aware of what could happen if the other workers reached Hal's aid first, and the women were outnumbered. All were pulled up short by a short burst of Uzi fire. Sitting up and rubbing her aching groin, Mildred saw Petey and Crow walking over to them. The sec man stayed silent and impassive while the foreman spoke.
Now cut that out. As long as they're here, they're not women. And definitely not gaudy house sluts. We all work, we all get what we want. The more trouble we have, the more we fall behind. And that would be bad. Right, Petey?
The sec man looked as uncomfortable as the others at the sudden steel that had entered the Native American's voice. But he still answered,
You call the shots, Crow.
Believe it.
He turned to the workers, including Ryan and JB.
Get back to work. Now.
Then, turning to Hal, he spat at the ground by the dazed workman's head.
Fool. Get your ass up and get out of my sight.
Finally, he looked toward Mildred and Christy.
Accept my apologies for this idiot. It won't happen again. And until we finish, it hasn't happened. Are we clear?
Before either woman had the chance to confirm or deny they understood his meaning, he turned and walked away, while Petey helped Hal to his feet and hustled him away, pushing the cart loaded with concrete that had sparked the incident.
Crow, I trust. But the rest of them?
She shuddered with apprehension. For the rest of their time working on the wag stop, there was a palpable air of tension. It was obvious to the companions that the workmen felt resentment toward them, fueled by Hal's attempted assault of Mildred. For their part, they all kept their simmering resentment under control. Ryan spoke with the companions on the evening of the attack, taking them away from the shelter to discuss the matter privately.
I know what you all want. In any other position, I'd agree with you. But we haven't got our blasters and we're outnumbered, while they're still armed.
Beat big odds before. Maybe best chill, get out.
Our albino friend could have a point. They will be out to get us now.
But we have Crow and the sick man on our side. And I really feel that getting to Salvation will be a good thing. If we chill them and get out, then we could have the whole of Baron Silas's sick force on our tail. There's too much time in Jack invested here for him to let us go if we stall his plans. Besides, where will we go?
Much as I hate to admit it, the man has a point. Lord alone knows I should be the first to want to blow them away. But it wouldn't do us much good.
So it's heads down, people. I reckon as we've got a couple of days' work left here, then we get a ride back to Salvation. I figure we can keep it frosty that long.
Maybe. As long as they see it that way.
The armorer's words of caution were justified, as the next morning would prove. The companions found themselves ignored and cold-shouldered by the workforce when not actually involved in the act of construction, and when they were working on the extension, they were addressed only if necessary. And then the accidents happened. The first was on the outside of the building, where JB and Ryan were working on the outer walls. Those were now in place, and using ladders to scale the 25-foot exterior, the workmen from Salvation were placing roof joists and timbers to take the asphalt tiles that would be laid on top. JB and Ryan were shifting the timbers from where they had been stored on delivery, carrying the heavy wood across the short distance to where they were handed up the ladders to Mikey and Malloy, who were placing and securing them across the roof space, flinging boards across the gaps between the tops of the interior and exterior walls, running across to place the joists and poles. The two workmen had been talking to each other, and also to Tilson and Hal, who were also catwalking across the open space, but all had been pointedly ignoring Ryan and JB. The one-eyed warrior planted his foot firmly on the first rung of the ladder, shouldering the weight of the joist that JB balanced from the rear.
Okay.
The armorer affirmed that he had the joist steady. Ryan then began to climb the ladder, swiftly and surely ascending. He gripped the joist with a hooked arm, knowing that JB would be lifting the heavy piece of wood by its bottom end and following him up the ladder. Sweat pouring down his forehead, plastering his dark curls and making his good eye sting with salt, Ryan looked up to see the silent Malloy standing on the edge of the wall, ready to take the joist as Ryan and JB pushed it upward, taking the weight until Malloy had rebalanced it for positioning on the roof. Malloy watched Ryan impassively, and the one-eyed warrior wasn't surprised that the workman was making him do the maximum amount with the minimum help. That was in line with their behavior all morning. Ryan grunted, partly as a signal to JB that they were to push the joist upward, and partly to let Malloy know it was coming. As the heavy piece of wood was propelled upward, Ryan felt some of the weight taken by the workman, and the passage of the joist became smoother. Both the armorer and Ryan began to descend the ladder as the joist left their grasp. At the bottom, JB paused for his friend.
I'll be glad when they've got them all in place. Guess we drew the short straw on this one.
Ryan grinned wryly.
Is that any surprise?
Then he noticed that the flicker of light on JB's spectacles had disappeared. The one-eyed warrior threw himself backward, rolling in the dust as he hit the ground. Without looking, he knew that JB had also noticed the shadow falling and had acted accordingly.
Shit!
He heard the armorer curse as he too hit the ground. But this was drowned out by the thud of the joist as it hit the ground at the spot where the two men had been standing a fraction of a second before. The indent it made on the earth revealed that it would have been fatal had it landed directly on the two companions.
Dark Knight, what the hell did you think you were doing?
Mikey and Malloy stood on the lip of the roof looking down.
That's careless. They'll have to carry that back up again.
Inside the building, where Anderson and Reich were still working alongside Doc, Dean, and Jack, there were other accidents waiting to happen. The walls were now in place, and wearing improvised masks against the dust, Anderson and Dean were insulating the fuel store while the others were fitting shelves and doors. The rolls of insulation were tied together by nylon cords that were knotted in several places, showing how many times the pieces of old rope had been used and recycled. Anderson had a Bowie knife, which he had honed on both edges in order to speed his rate of work, and with it he was slicing through the cords at a rapid rate as they unrolled the insulation rolls. They were old asbestos and fiberglass insulation, taken from pre-dark factories, and spilled poisonous dust into the enclosed space. Dean watched Anderson, distrusting the man with the knife, when he was unarmed. Some of the knots on the rope were doubled over, and even with such a finely honed blade, the workman was having trouble cutting through the ropes. Dean wondered why Anderson didn't just cut the rope in areas where there were no knots. It never occurred to him that there was a method to this madness.
Check that roll.
Dean started, as it was the first time the workman had spoken to him that day.
Check it. Asbestos or fiber?
Dean turned to the roll, thinking nothing of the request. After all, the varying thickness of the rolls had been determining their positions on the walls of the room. But this roll was difficult. It was wrapped in a layer of cotton cloth, suggesting that there was a greater degree of disintegration than on other rolls. Dean bent to examine the roll through a tear in the cotton cloth. As he lowered his head, he felt a rush of air by his ear, and he fell to his side.
Hot pipe!
He looked at the roll and saw Anderson's Bowie knife embedded into the roll, the shaft still quivering from the force of the impact. He looked at Anderson, who shrugged his shoulders, eyes cold and impassive.
I guess it slipped out of my hand on an awkward knot.
Beyond the fuel store, a similar thing happened with Jack. In one of the rooms, he and Reich were putting shelving into what would be the food store. They had screws and bracketing for the shelves, but there was only the one screwdriver between the two of them. The only other screwdriver on site was being used by